Hi, Vance. How are you tonight? Welcome to my virtual office. It was great that you asked me to come in and chat tonight about my latest projects, and I'm hoping that we can just generate a bit of a conversation about some of the things that I'm doing. So I'll be guided by you as to how you want to proceed. I'm happy to just present a few things and get you to ask questions, and let's see how that goes.
Okay, let's see, I'm opening up some of your blog links, and my cat is trying to get out the door and in the background there. Let's see, I always start out by saying who we are. This is a Learning Together session. Learning Together always meets on Sundays at around noon GMT, but Carol McCullough, Coach Carol, is with us in Australia, so we're meeting a little early tonight. And at 11 GMT. And what time is that in Australia?
It's just on 9 p.m. over here.
Okay. It's earlier than we normally meet. I was explaining that I had to drive at 140 kilometers an hour back from Al Ain today. I live in Abu Dhabi. And I just got here about half an hour before this started and got myself sitting in a chair that looks something like Carol's office there, but not with the same view out the window. I mentioned it's the 16th of September. I always like to give the date because I hate it when I hear podcasts and they don't say when they were made. So, 16th of September 2012. And so it's really nice that you agreed to join us. I guess I should say that I met you, Carol, I think, most viscerally, or you know, our greatest online presence together was at the EPCOP MOOC last summer, was it, or summer before? In fact, I've got a lot of interesting artifacts from that I'll show you in a moment. But that was a kind of a nice event. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can certainly do that. That was a great experience, and it was last year. This year seems to have flown by quite incredibly, and when I think back and realise that the EPCOP MOOC was in 2011, my mind just goes bananas. I can't imagine that amount of time having passed. It was 6 weeks, maybe a little longer in its delivery, but we had a few months in development phase before that. So I think we started maybe around June putting it together, and it was a group of us who are ePortfolio enthusiasts, and there was a little bit of money for me to set that up, but for the most part the other presenters were all voluntary and not paid. So it was in the true spirit of a massive open online course.
Well,
and the e-learn space that we developed as part of the MOOC has become a great repository of resources that we often use now for anyone interested in ePortfolios. Let me just
Where's
go and
the
get the address for that and
for
I'll
that?
Pop it in to the text chat and for you, Vance.
I made a little repository too. I just put its I keep tutorials online for a course on multi literacies that I'm teaching. In fact, the next time around I'm going to call it what am I going to call it? Something with the word MOOC in it. Maybe I'll find the I've been moving it over to a MOOC format, and I'm sort of moving it away from calling it multi-literacy. So basically, it's got a lot of tutorials, and I used a lot of your artifacts, your recordings in those tutorials, because the way you ran that MOOC was you talked about a different tool each time, and so I thought each of those was kind of a nice description of the tool and how you work it and the experience of the person who was presenting, and it was a real nice introduction to a lot of different tools. So yeah, I'm sure that will be useful to have that repository there. We'll refer to that. Maybe I'll open it right now just to get it up. There we go. So what made you decide to put on a MOOC? Because a MOOC, you know, anything can happen. Why a MOOC? Why not some other sort of more conventional course?
It's a great question, Vance. We decided on the MOOC approach because we wanted to take it out as wide as we could without trying to contain it as a course for professional development for which people would need to enroll and perhaps pay money. We wanted to avoid both of those things. We wanted it to be free and open and for people to nominate or register because of their interest in e-portfolios. We didn't offer that they would have any kind of accredited achievements at the end other than learning more about e-portfolios. So keeping it as an online open course appealed to us for that reason. Plus, I had long wanted to explore how well a Google site would stand up to the test of being a site for a MOOC. I had been following a couple of MOOCs prior to this one, and I hadn't really liked the way some of them had been structured. So I wanted to try something new, and we came up with the whole idea of using Google for everything. So we had a Google site for the original community of practice, and then we built another Google site for the LearnSpace. And surrounding that was the Google group to which we invited membership. That's still going, but in a loosely managed way. I hope that answers your question.
Well, can you name one or two affordances of Google groups that make them better than other venues you've tried or other MOOCs you've attended? EPCOT MOOC had, EduMOOC had ran from a Google platform that might have been just before your session. Do you remember that? Do you remember if it was before or after? Or did you attend that MOOC?
I'm just trying to think. I can't remember if it was before or after.
Yeah. Anyway, they used
us wanting to just dabble a little in the development of a MOOC in an easily collaborative way. Therefore, the Google Sites, once again, was something that we could use together.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a trainer by profession, a consultant, or where did the name coach come from?
Yeah, I am a consultant, and I'm also an instructional designer, but I focus and specialize in an e-mentoring role for teachers in the VET, so vocational educational training environments. And the name for my Coach Carol digital identity came about some years back when I was an e-mentor for a group of teachers who were learning about online networking and forming their own communities of practice. And because I had had some experience in that, I was selected as their mentor. And the organizers decided that they would just refer to me as the coach. And I like alliteration, so the words Coach Carol just flowed off the tongue very easily. And then I decided the year after, or a couple of years later, to use that as my business name. And that's where CoachCarol.net grew from. And most people know me by that now, and they just they tweet or Google me or whatever with Coach Carol. So it's actually been useful for me to set up some things, that whole theme of Coach Carol. There's only one other in the world, apparently. I originally used to get some of the tweets coming through from this other person, Coach Carol. I think she's an American, and she's a sporting coach of some kind. So I think that was one reason why I changed my tweet identity to Coach Carol 2012, just to make that distinction. So here on this slide, I've just regurgitated what I had intended to include tonight, just to remind me what the three themes were. So if you like, I can go on and describe a couple of those. I've got a couple of slides to illustrate.
Just one more question about yourself.
Just let me know if there's other questions you want to ask first.
Yeah, I'm just curious what you were doing before you were you went into business as a consultant. What was your background before you entered it as in that Coach Carol sense? You were in the
VAT. Well, I started my career as a secondary school teacher here in Victoria, Australia, and I spent probably 20 years of my career at that job. And at the end of it, I was looking for new challenges and wanted to move into the trainer environment in our TAFE system, so technical and further education, or community colleges, as some are known as. And that was in around the early 90s. I then became a TAFE teacher and then a coordinator in the business management department, as it was then called, at a large TAFE in the suburban area of Melbourne, Victoria. There was nothing about me as Coach Carol back then. I was a trainer and coordinator. And that was my very early days. And I just noticed Michael has joined us.
Michael,
you know some of this story about me. Vance was just asking me a bit about my background.
I'll just hit the...
test your mic and say hello?
I was just looking for him on Skype. I don't really remember all the time how our communities come together. It seems I've known you for a long time, even before Epcot MOOC. But I can't remember what connection, but it must have had something to do with that network, the TAFE network. How are you doing, Michael? And so I just even hit the enter button and went ahead and sent Michael the message I was composing. Just saw he was on Skype, so it was nice of you to join us. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Vance. Thought I'd better come along and support a fellow Antipodean. How are you, Carol?
I am very well, thank you, Michael. It seems such a long time since I've heard your dulcet tones. It's delightful to hear you once again. I had been asked to present tonight as a request from Vance. And Vance, I'm just thinking back to maybe some of the early connections might have been in a very early Webhead area, I think. Gee, this is going back such a long time. So we obviously do know each other from a previous life. So did I answer that last question, or was there more?
Yeah, no, I was just kind of curious. We're answering each other's questions. How do we know each other? We're sort of circling each other's networks, and this is kind of karma has brought us here this evening to just find out more about you, because that's actually what I like to do on Learning Together. I like to talk to people and find out what they do, and because we're always learning from people. Our last interaction of real learning nature was the Epcot MOOC, and I just wanted to catch up. I think I had made a note somewhere that to get you online. I think you'd offered. I can't remember what you offered to talk about exactly, but I emailed you, and so here you are. And you're welcome to tell us about your projects. I'm sure they're very interesting. And I've got a few web pages up in case you need any questions to prompt you. But what have you been doing since Epcot MOOC?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that question. It just seems a crazy world right now for me, in that so many things have happened since the Epcot MOOC of last year. I don't know the reasons for it. It was just one of those situations where I found in the last 12 months or so, the requests for me to be part of one project or another just escalated. And I found that for the very first time, I've had to subcontract out some of the work because I couldn't do it all with one pair of hands and one brain. Some of the things that I have been doing of late, I think I've had about six projects this year, but one that is a continuing process for me is helping people in the Moodle environment. So one of the most recent projects I did was to help design a new professional development course that is being will be run in Moodle. And this was over at eSkills, which Michael Coughlin knows very well. And I worked then for organisations in South Australia as well as in my own state of Victoria. And I'll go into a little bit more detail about that one. Yes, I do have an URL for that, but of course it's one that you wouldn't be able to see behind because it's a login situation. So what I did was, I'll just move to that page. I've just got a screen grab of the way that course looks in the Moodle environment at eSkills. And we were really pleased that it was a challenge for us because it was the first time we'd worked in the new version of Moodle, which is now 2.3. So there are some really nice aspects of it that we learned to use quite well. And we liked the finished look of the 21 Tools for Educators course. And it really did stretch me and my team to produce something that we were very proud of. It's yet to be delivered because it's brand new. So I'm hoping that I will be once again asked to facilitate that when they get enough takers. So in it, we've been able to focus on our instructional design, of course. And we've used the grid format. So this area here that you see is using the grid format in Moodle. I'm not sure how familiar you are with that learning management system. But rather than have the traditional scroll and pen, we wanted to make sure that when a learner comes into the page, they click on the image in order to go to the next point. And so we developed this course to help 21st century educators learn to use and to grow the skills in communicating online, collaborating online, how to inspire and engage learners, manage online practices and stay connected. It was based on the old 23 Things module that was developed some years back. Are you familiar with that one, Vance?
Does that stand for 21st century?
21C does stand for 21st century indeed. And the old course called 23 Things, I think for some reason they chose 23 particular Web 2 tools. I'm not sure. Michael, you might be able to shed more light on the 23 things.
It was actually invented by librarians. I mean, which librarian or group of librarians, I don't know. But I don't know, 5-7 years ago, they just started to offer this course. So it's a kind of, it's a very open template, but it was called 23 Things, and just it just got picked up by people all over the world who ran their own version of 23 Things. And eSkills were the last of many in a line of organisations to offer 23 Things. And the beauty of it is, of course, you can offer your own 23 Things. It can be your 23 Things, which is a different set of tools from other 23 Things. So, but it was librarians who got it rolling.
That's right, yes. A very powerful beginning to that whole professional development process. And we've just taken it forward a little bit further. And Michael, have you got the address for the eSkills website where they're advertising that one? I'm just trying to pick it up in my links here, but I'm not having much luck. because it's no good giving you the link to the Moodle course because you won't be able to get in, but I can give you, or Michael could give you, the link to the eSkills area. So let me just see if I can find that for you.
Yeah, I'm Googling 23 things, trying to find out what the 23 things could be. I've actually just today, my work today was to kind of create a little, I'm supposed to train some teachers in something I've been teaching lately, and I had 20 steps. It just came out to 20 steps. The last step was to present what they had found out on learning together. I don't think anyone will get down to step 20, but anyhow, sort of to take them through a few tools like SurveyMonkey and Google Docs and Prezi, things that they're likely not all that familiar with, and get them to do things in them in 20 steps and end up with a presentation, which I'm sure will not happen. But anyway, it is a 20th step. I needed a 20th step, actually. That just occurred to me in a brainstorm. Or with thunder and lightning kind of thing.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Meanwhile, I've lost the tab for 23 things. Oh, here we go. 23 things. Let's see. 23 things to complete. The 23 things. Okay, I'm clicking on that. I don't seem to be, let's see, week one. Week two is blogging, photos and images. RSS and news readers, tagging folksonomies, technorati. Sounds kind of like what the things we used to do quite a bit in Webheads. We were exploring those kinds of things. So, yeah, I'm trying to find a date on this one.
What I can do, Vance, is show you the skills matrix that we developed as a starting point for creating this course. So I'll just grab that for you.
Yeah, it's nice to know what skills people need, you know, especially for people like Michael and yourself and I. It's very difficult to, I think maybe Michael does a better job of it because or maybe you too, you deal with people in your workplace and are training them all the time. Me, I'm kind of working with students and then trying to bring teachers into it and finding out that sometimes the teachers have very little, very little literacy along. For example, I tried to do an exercise in which I wanted to show them that if you wanted to make a class portal, you could use Google Docs and hyperlink from there. And so I tried to get them to hyperlink a couple of Google Docs together. And the concept of hyperlinking seemed to, I was really surprised at what a stumbling block that was. I didn't think that was going to be the problem. But the people who tried to do it, they were supposed to, at the end, have two documents that would, it's called it a link loop. You click on one, you should go to the other. You click on the second one, you should go back to the first one. Click on, round and round. I was having a lot of trouble getting people to do that. Only about half of the people, maybe it was my teaching, I don't know, but I ended up making it very explicit in a wiki. But I was really surprised that presented a problem. So what do we have in this matrix here? We have resource repositories, reflective tools, social networks. Reflective tools of bloggers, resource repositories like Flickr, SlideShare. I can't scroll here.
Yeah, so if I can just describe what this is all about for you, would that be all right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Flickr is one of your tools.
Actually, we use quite a lot of Google Docs to collaborate with the team who built the 21 Sieve tools for educators. And I'll show you one other in a moment. But the selection matrix was really for us to get our heads around, well, what tools are we talking about and what kind of skills are surrounding those tools, so that we begin with the pedagogy and build the develop the tools in as we go. And you'll see that the ones that we've included in the course are all now highlighted in green. And some of them would be put into three different categories, easy, average, or complex. And from that kind of discussion in building the course, we decided that it would then enable us to produce learning materials for people at different levels. So it could be that the people are raw beginners and they want to take the easy ones and do something that they can achieve in a short period of time. And we might have had other more experienced teachers coming in who already had some of those easy tools and wanted to focus more on the more complex. So that led us to building in a bit of a design into the course where there were challenge activities and then bonus activities. Because there were so many tools that were being demonstrated, we didn't think that everyone was going to be able to finish everything. So we were trying to give them some options along the way and make sure that there was something for everybody. So this matrix kind of spelt that out for us quite well.
I'll show you what I was doing today.
Document isn't a public one in answer to your question there, but it could be. You know, just probably needs a bit of tidying up. Okay, I'm going to go and look at that link. And I had one other tool that I wanted to showcase with you that helped us design the way that course came about. So bear with me while I get that one.
I'll just share with you a little story that I came across a few months ago in connection with what you were saying about the gaps of knowledge with teachers, Vance. I was asked to assist a group of teachers move their content from Janathan, an Australian LMS, to Moodle. So we were doing that. And while I was working with one woman, she accidentally closed her browser, and I said, "Oh, you've clicked the wrong X there. You need to open up your browser." And she said, "How do you do that?" And this was a person who I'd been told had been teaching online. And what I worked out is that she never turned off her computer, so she taught online in Janison, and she just came in and resumed where she was in the Janison mm-hmm. tool. And that was the extent of her learning of the internet. But she was teaching online because she could click around in Janison, but she couldn't open a browser.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that story. That is incredible. It's amazing what people will do in order to cope, I suppose. What I'm going to share with you here is, if I've got the right one open, I hope so. This is another little sharing tool that we had going there for a while called Poplet. And I liked it because it enabled us to work on it together. Although, I think when you zoom in, let me see if I can zoom in on this one. Zoom, please. There we go. At the moment, it's got my name on all of those blocks, but I can take them off by going into one of these, if I can remember which one. No, I can't remember which one, where I can turn my name off each of those. But we started this whole, it's like a mind map, yeah. But you can have people sharing and building it together, and you simply add a block and change its colour very simply. But we began with with that matrix that I showed you before and talking about the skills that were required and the tools that they needed, we then divided those into what we thought was a collection that would make sense. So the tools that you would use to inspire and engage learners, manage online practices, communicate online, collaborate online, and network online. And then on the left-hand side, started to build the model for how that would transcribe into a Moodle course of 8 or 9 weeks. And in there, we also allowed a couple of weeks in which the participants could plan a project and then to share it. So it came out nicely as a professional development model that would be meaningful for the participants. So that's the Poplet.
What kind of projects were they coming up with?
Well, I'd love to be able to answer that question, but we haven't delivered it yet, so I have no idea.
Well, when you deliver it, how do you anticipate that this will be used?
I think it will be varied from one level to another, and I liken it to what we're doing over here in Victoria with another of our projects. It's all about mentoring teachers in the role of developing for e-learning capacity, and that's our what we call ACSI e-mentor program. And what they are coming up with is probably very similar to what we would expect teachers to do in the 21C tools course, where they would select some kind of e-learning project that was achievable in a short period of time or at a medium level, start planning ahead for embedding e-learning tools of one kind or another into their organisation, or implementing some of the tools in a few of their courses. And then the third and larger one might be to develop an e-learning strategy right across their entire organisation. So I imagine that some of the participants in the 21C course might have come up with things like that. And we would then have provided them with help in creating an action plan to do all of that.
Yeah, I think that first one is the part that's missing in most places where I've been able to work, and that is, you know, implementing something in your own work environment. Is that what you meant, I think, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a few groups in our Victorian, we call them Learn Locals here. So they're adult learning centres. They're quite small. Some of them really only have one coordinator. Others have teams of teachers. But one interesting one who is a single coordinator situation, she wanted to develop a website. And I showed her how to use WordPress. And she's happily now using her WordPress to promote what they do in their community house. Another group have invested some money in the acquiring of a set of iPads, and they're now building some courses for their adult community in the use of iPads. I think they call it something like iPads for Scaredy Cats. Something that was achievable and that for which they had A, the infrastructure, and B, the necessary equipment, and C, teachers who had already been trained in the use of them. So yeah, these are the sorts of things that are really important to get started so that they get an idea of how they then plan to move to the next phase.
Which is using them with students, because I mean, obviously you have to use them, well, if you don't use them with each other, then, well, you can use them with students, that's fine, but something like what we're doing now is, I just find that there's no conception of, say, getting students online unless the teachers are themselves interacting with each other in kind of the way that we're doing now. they're kind of unlikely, if they haven't had some experience doing that with peers, they're probably very unlikely to be interested in doing it or see the point, you know. Do you find that? Or do you think anybody goes the other way? Do they get their students involved without ever having gone through, you know, working with peers professionally?
Yeah, some do take the wrong tactic, but we guide them in the right way eventually. And I'm a big advocate for that very approach, Vance, that in order for you to be an e-teacher, you first need to be an e-learner. How can you understand what the needs of the learner are online if you haven't yet experienced that? So one of the projects that we did earlier this year was a simple Google site approach, not a massive open online course, but a mini open online course this time, on where students could come in to become an e-learner. So they learned some of the basic skills that they needed in order to then contemplate being an e-learner in another program. And that's typically a good place for teachers to start if they haven't had any experience themselves. A mini MOOC. Absolutely, Michael.
I'm taking, sort of taking Gavin Dudney's course on digital literacies right now, which is also taught in a Moodle environment. And it's been going for maybe a week now. He gives a task every day, or maybe once or twice a day. And I find myself falling behind, and as other people do, I guess my attitude is I just go in and grab a task and I try to do it. I'm having a lot of trouble fitting in with the structure of it, but it's giving me a lot of insight in the way that I conduct my own courses. Because people, as George Seaman says, when he talks about his MOOCs and the reason he thinks the way he does about designing books, or why have MOOCs, is that you know, all the learners come in such different varieties. You can't, you know, assume they just all have different needs, and so the MOOC is what addresses those needs, or an e-learning course where you just come in and you can't presuppose that people are taking a course for free, you know, or even if they pay for it, still can't suppose the needs are never homogenous. So it's interesting, though, to go from both directions.
Yeah, it has been an interesting experience to see what's happening with our eMentor program. It's now been going for 4 years, and it's really cementing itself into the work practices of our Learn Locals. They now understand how important it is to follow in a sequential manner. And some of those people had been involved in the Epcot MOOC, so they've got an understanding of how those situations work as well. Vance, what I wanted to do was also to just touch on some of the other things that I do with the ACFI eMentor program. Because one of the biggest jobs that I have had in the past and is growing again is the stewarding of an online community. So do you want me to just spend a few minutes on that?
Sure, please do. That was one of the things I had up on my screen to ask you about next.
Excellent. We have had a network happening online for all of those 4 years in this program, but for one reason or another, it had been lagging behind in connectivity, or just plain activity. And we had to look behind some of the reasons for that, and we got together as a group of e-mentors to decide on what we needed to do to change it. And part of that was in readdressing the way it looked on the screen. So what you're seeing now on this slide is how it's looking in its current theme. Prior to that, it was very bland, very pale, no colour, no particular branding other than the Learn Local at the top left there. But we wanted our own branding in it, and we wanted to build into it some important aspects for the people who were going to frequent it. And one of those is this item here, I'll just grab my pointer, the Digital Literacy Library. Now that's a link to another website, which happens to be a wiki space that is associated with the whole program and has been there as long as the network. What people were asking for was a one-stop page where they could go to find at least a few links to places they could go to for help at each level of their development of e-learning capacity. So I thought I would just show you that one. So I'm going to go back and bring that one up on the screen for you. And the reason for building it in the way that you're about to see it was based on what I learned from the way things are done in the eSkills.com. So I was very impressed, and I'm always impressed with what Marlene does, and so I've emulated some of that in this Digital Literacy Library. So I'll share that with you. So the link that you saw on the network takes you to this page, which is our wiki space. I'll just shift things around a little bit here so you can see it. So what we wanted was a set of tools under certain categories. And this is the way we approach the building of e-learning capacity with our Learn Locals. You know, some are in that first zone of getting started with e-learning. Some are really now exploring. A larger group now are really networking widely. And at the upper end, we've got groups of people who are ready for the designing of e-learning and implementing it. So we've got some favourite tools here and some new ones that are coming in that we wanted to be able to provide for them in a one-page, one-stop shop. So it's a dynamic document. It's still growing. And by linking it to the network, we're hoping that the 300 members, nearly 400 members now, will find it to be of use. So I'll just stop there for a moment.
Yeah, I'm browsing around. I think I'm in free stuff for e-learning right now. And looks nice. Some nice resources here. And so,
yeah, we didn't want to overwhelm our groups. We want to keep it simple. And we borrowed a few things from both South Australia and from Victoria, as well as our national repositories.
What is the context that this is used in?
When we start working with a Learn Local, they have to first express an interest in being part of the program, and they then have to work with us in deciding on what they need to learn in order to build their e-capacity for themselves and their organisation. So we use some of these tools when we are talking to the groups. So when we're getting started with them, we might send them off to the free stuff for e-learning. We would definitely be telling them about coming along to some of the Australian webinars that are held through the ALA. And one of our e-mentors, Michael Chalk in Victoria, is associated with those. When they're ready for exploring e-learning, we want them to go and have a look at toolboxes, for example. We want them to take a look at e-portfolios. And they might want to pop over to the South Australia and see what e-courses are available. That's right, Mark, I'll be over there MC. So I built this page to complement what we do with the groups in helping them reach their e-capacity. Does that make sense?
The e-portfolios page on, flexiblelearning.net? Or you mean the page we're looking at now?
The page you were looking then. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just clicked that one around. Didn't mean to do that.
Yeah. That's really nice. I've just been clicking around.
But it does bring me to my other piece that I wanted to explore with you, and that was my focus on e-portfolios. But before I finish with that one, I just wanted to say something more about the network itself. We decided that each of the regions would be host in the network for a month. So my region of Hume has the job of doing that in September. And we're finding that people are not really interested in using the discussion forums very much. They don't have the time to be engaging in a conversation for which they would be committed to coming back. They want to come in, they want to see something that's useful to them. If there's an event, they'll join it. They want to go off to the Digital Literacy Library. But they also might want to just touch base with another member because there's a chat room built in. So we wanted to make sure that we were providing the network tools that allow the members to do what they wanted to do. And I'm realizing now after a couple of weeks where the forums are really only being answered by their mentors and not the members, that that's not the way they want to go. So we're really thinking differently about how we manage the community. So each of the regional mentors and champions will tackle the job of managing the network each month, and they'll make changes in the way it looks and what they're doing in there. And so it's been a real challenge to find out what's going to work for this particular network of Learn Locals. And I see Claire has joined us now. I don't know Claire, so perhaps you do, Vance. I'll just stop for a minute.
I do. I know Claire very well. We've known each other for a long time. How are you, Claire? Claire doesn't normally come with a microphone. I don't know. Let's see if she can say hi. No mic, yeah. So, and it's also very early for Claire. She's surely just awakened in Pittsburgh. So, yeah, what you've been talking about, this Ning network here, is kind of similar. We have a similar problem at in TESOL Arabia, which Claire is familiar with. We have a Ning, but we really are not able to get it to gel. So you said you were looking for things that would make it work. You said you changed the layout. You said people, and you tried getting different regions to host it, but that's not working so well, you said. So what do you think, Will, what do you think is a favorable approach to getting a network, to get people in such a network to come together and actually produce some interaction?
Well, that is the $60 million question. I wish I had a right answer for that. I'm beginning to suspect, though, that it needs for the members to have the ownership of running the network. So as part of the program, I'm thinking that the e-champions should, the next rundown, they should be challenging the e-leaders to come forward and to take part in the network and to really own it. I think that probably is going to be part of the answer. Our program is a three-tiered affair where you've got the e-mentor who might have one or two e-champions in the region, and we might have anything from 10 to 12 different Learn Locals involved in the program, and they might have within that Learn Local 2 to 3 e-leaders. So all up, you know, for Hume, for example, we have 25 people across 10 Learn Locals, and that varies around each region. And therefore, I'm thinking that in order to get more activity happening in the network, they need to be the ones who decide on what it is they want to do in there.
Yeah, what makes them come to the Learn Local network in the first place?
That's a good question, because it's got a little bit of a history, a bit of a tradition. The program that began 4 years ago was, it didn't have the Learn Local branding on it. This is a recent thing. It was a network for those people for whom we provided the e-mentoring services, which was not all of the Learn Locals. It's now developed a step further where it's seen as the network for all Learn Locals across Victoria. And so the branding has only just changed in the last 12 months. So I'm thinking that the reason that they come to the network has been something historical for them. They might have joined some years ago and have not bothered to come back because they just didn't see it as being of use for them. The more recent newly joined members will have a really good reason for coming. One, because I've told them they have to, and so are all the other e-mentors telling them. But secondly, and probably more importantly, is that this is where they will be able to rub shoulders with other people in the program and to learn from each other.
Yeah, I suppose there are, well, take my own, the TESOL Arabia network. It's a NING. It's called taedtech.ning.org or com, sorry, ning.com. And it has, actually, I am trying to breathe some life into it by associating the Learning Together events, posting them there. So there's always something going on with Learning Together, but there's very little else that goes on. And we're having some discussion about it, how we can jazz it up and get people to take ownership. But I think it's just one of many avenues for people to rub shoulders with one another. It's not particularly productive. So myself, I go to the network I'm in right now. What we're doing right now, this is a lot more productive for me because it's a part of the NING. But it, I don't know how you get people to take ownership of something. That's exactly what we're trying to do. That's what we're having very little success at. We're not really getting any real interest in, groundswell of people thinking that this is a vehicle that's going to be of use to them. But you seem to have done a good job, at least in presenting it as having possibilities. You might have to come back and talk to us just about this. If you have some success in getting people to, push forward agendas, activities, discussions, things like that, then, Are you in this? Are you involved in this, Michael?
Well, not in this particular one. I've known of it for a long time, but the description that Carol gave a few minutes back about the behavior of people in this network is almost a mirror-like description of what we call a learning technology mentor network within TAFE in South Australia. And they will come to events, they will do courses, but any ongoing participation in things like discussion forums or other people generating ideas, which is not something that you said, Carol, but it relies on me. If I don't initiate, nothing happens. People will respond to whatever I initiate, again, around a specific event, but no ongoing participation, interaction. And I guess, I've actually told them I'm no longer doing it. So it just sits there in the background, and if someone picks it up, it might happen. But it's obviously around need, and if there is no perceived need or being met, then it's not worth the extra that goes in between the events because they don't see the added value. And I'm just thinking, as we always do, Vance, when we have conversations like this, the web heads continues to tick on, tick over, and sometimes it's a lot more than tick. So what are the things that enable web heads to still have this participation? It waxes and wanes, but 15 years on, we're still here. Why?
Yeah, I guess it's possibly because we are so involved in each other's personal lives, and you know, that is that we talk not just about, you know, professional things, but I mean, there's usually there's a lot of personality involved. But also with learning together, something we started in 2010, it's only just now, after 2 years, getting to the point where people are actually going to the wiki and writing themselves in, and it doesn't happen that often, but people are very shy about that. But it's starting to happen, but it's taken 2 years. So sometimes you just have to just keep pushing and or keep it out there anyway, and then things change. People come to understand social networks better and start using them. But that's the perennial question. How do you do it? I mean, if we wanted to do it again in some other way, how would you do that? I don't know. Maybe I'll make that the topic of a PhD or something.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Ben. I think I'd like to write one about a very different story here that I've slipped over to, which is our Australia E-Series. This one had no money and no real infrastructure around it. Began as an agreement between Anne Mershon and myself, Anne is a teacher in southern part of Victoria in a school, and we were so impressed with what we saw happening with what Steve Hagenham was doing in America with his webinars that we wanted to do the same for our Australian teachers. And so we began this thing called, which is now called the Australia E-Series, and it has just grown like topsy, and we've now got several volunteer presenters who regularly want to organise or simply present a webinar. We run them during the evenings. This is a typical example of one that's run in an afternoon session by Anne. And this one I really want to go to on Tuesday because it's all about Evernote, one of my favourite tools. But what we're finding is that teachers will come along to these and they will just tumble over themselves to get involved, perhaps because it's just 1 hour of their time in a time frame that suits them. It's outside of their working hours, so we run them between 8 and 9 p.m. on Wednesdays and Thursdays. And what we've found now is that we've been recognized globally by many different teachers who pop in and out of these sessions and learn from us as we learn from them. And I'm really impressed with what we've been able to do. As you can see over there on the right-hand side, is that we've now got seven presenters. Not all of them have got pictures there. All of them women, except for the one that's missing, Mick Lown, who is at Deakin, is a student at Deakin University, so he's the only guy involved. But this has just grown astronomically, and we're just really thrilled with the results of that one. So you can't really tell what's going to work. Mike, I've just noticed your message down there about the Travelling Roadshow, and we're really pleased that he's going to be coming to Australia to do exactly that. And, you know, we've already got people championing it a bit to be part of that. He is my hero.
You say you have seven presenters. That means that only these people present, or only these people have presented?
I misled you there. They are our, perhaps we should say, moderators who may present, but who are most likely to have organised to have another presenter, like Anne is introducing Beck Spink at this particular session. And if I go over here to our webinar recording, you'll see what we've done just in this year, the different sorts of things that have appealed to people and different presenters who've come along. And Claire, I've just seen your question down there about the Travelling Roadshow. What we've organised with Steve, and we do hope it's going to work, is that he will come to four different capital cities of Australia and do a conference type one day event, and then perhaps some workshops at specific educational environments or maybe corporates. So he's the one that's doing most of the traveling, and Alison Miller is the organizer for that, and I'm working alongside of her. So I hope that explains what the Traveling Roadshow is all about.
Can
Unless
I
another
just add a little bit to that?
Show that you're meaning there, Michael.
It is a bit different. I can't type at the moment. This has never happened to me in Illuminate or Blackboard. I can't type. Just won't go into the text box. I can type anywhere else on my desktop, but not in this little text box. In the US, Steve is about to embark on, it's roughly one city per fortnight, and he's not delivering any workshops. He's going into town, and it's a major city in most cases, not a town, and anyone who wants to show up, shows up, talks about education on a Friday afternoon. They meet again on a Saturday to kind of further, and then kind of whip up a, he just wants to create a lot of data, get opinions from people all over the US, and kind of submit it up the line to people about, well, this is what people all over the nation are thinking. So it's not about presenting, it's about being there and getting any Joe Blow who wants to show up to give their thoughts on education. And that's roughly one city per fortnight over the whole of the US for several months. And I thought, I'd just love to do that here. And I'm really tempted to ask him, can I pitch this idea? Because I don't think I'm going to do it, but I think it's just a really brilliant, simple idea.
Right, now I understand what you mean. Yes, I did read about what Steve was planning to do. And he just is that brilliant kind of charismatic leader who would make the best of that. And it would be nice if we could do something similar. And to answer your question, it wasn't you, it was the fact that whilst the web tour was open, nobody could type into the text box. I'd not realised that before.
Yeah, I think Classroom 2.0, which is Steve Hargadon's Ning, isn't it? He has a Ning. Peggy George a couple of other people who, anyway, Peggy George is certainly instrumental in that, and they do podcasts. Do you podcast your events, by the way? Is there a podcast page for your recordings?
We haven't as yet. I've only recently acquired the Illuminate Publish tool, and I've done a couple of those, but we haven't done a full set. It's something that we've been talking about, but once again, it's the time issue for a group of volunteers to find the time. So it's probably going to be a summer job. I've just put into the text chat something else that Steve has been focused on. I've had two of these now. The Global Education Conference would be a really good one to take part in. Sure, some of them won't be in time frames that suit us, but once again, the recordings are brilliant. So I'm really grateful to having Steve provide us with the room in which we run our Australia E-Series. I must make mention of that. And that's free of charge. And we've now got 7 moderators who manage that room.
So that's another Illuminate room, not this one?
That's correct. It's it would have the heading Australia E-Series at the top instead of Coach Carroll. This is my virtual office, so it only holds 25 people at the most, whereas the Australia E-Series room, we can have a couple hundred if we ever met that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I really encourage you to podcast as much as you can, because Michael and I were having trouble with Publish, and I solved the problem. Did you read about how I solved it, Michael?
No, I didn't, Vance. Please tell me.
Well, I got a Macintosh. I borrowed my wife's, Bobby's Macintosh. So it works on Macintosh. Peggy was saying that she mentioned in her mail that she was using Macintosh. And is that what you're using, Carol? Are you using Mac to do your published recordings, or are you using PC?
No, I'm using a PC. That's an interesting situation. I use an iPad for other things, and what I'm really hanging out for is being able to use Blackboard Collaborate from the iPad. We did a bit of a test run on that last week, and it only works for those rooms that are scheduled through the SAS system. So it wouldn't work for this room because it's open 24/7. I'm just seeing David joining us there, and welcome to you. Good day to you, or good night.
David is in New Jersey, or that's where he usually is anyway. Maybe he's wondering why I'm not in Tapton. We used to go to Tapton about this time. But anyway, yeah, you've got a really nice set of recordings there, and it would be wonderful if you could get them up and podcast them. Does WordPress let you set podcast easily?
Now that's a good question. I use Podomatic, and that's what immediately popped into my brain when you said podcast them. Would you advise doing that, or what do you use?
Well, Michael and I both have Podomatic sites. Podomatic is Podomatic does it very neatly. Actually, it's a good way to do it. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Alex podcasts through Blogger, doesn't he? But I do it from Postgres, but I apply FeedBurner to it. So if you can set up a FeedBurner feed, and you just tell it you're a podcaster, and it sets up a podcast feed for you. And like Michael says, Podomatic is just built for podcasting. You probably have to pay for it because you'll run out of space. But it's a nice service. It's not very expensive, and it's worth it.
Well, as you can see, I've just put in my action to do just that in the very near future, because it sounds like a reasonable way to go. My question is about, you know, each one of our webinars is at least an hour long. Do you find that people will listen without the visual interactions for that period of time?
Well, that's the way I get probably half my modern knowledge because, you know, as I mentioned, I just drove in from Aline. It's an hour and a half drive, so I'm 3 hours a day on the road, or before that I was 2 hours a day, and, you know, I also jog, so that could be another hour. So I listen to quite a lot of podcasts or e-readers and things like that. But yeah, the set of speakers you have there, and you do it regularly, would be definitely something I would subscribe to, and I would probably listen to all of them. That's what I listen to EdTech Crew, Australian perspective there. Every time they do a VTE, I can't remember the name of the podcast, but I also subscribe to Michael's Potting Down Under. It comes in frequently, but it's enjoyable when it does come. VTE, Talking VTE is what it's called, Talking VTE. With, I don't know Stephen Ridgway, but I recognize his voice anywhere. And Potting Down Under, that's Michael's podcast. And I've got one also, Vance Stevens at Podomatic. But yeah, and of course, I try to podcast the Learning Together events. This one right here will be podcast. We'll make a publish recording from it, and then I'll put it up at Postgres, where I have a feed burner set up. And hopefully it's podcast. I don't know how well that works. That's what I'm trying to get feedback from the community about. So there is a link you can go to and see if anything will download for you. I think our network is a little slow, or their network is. Postgres is also a bit slow. I'm not sure what's wrong with them, but I'm not always able to download my own files, although the other podcast sites work. But I believe that they are being podcasted via the bandwidth, but I haven't really got evidence. I'd like to have some evidence about that. So if anybody would like to subscribe and tell me if they're actually getting the recordings down, that would be could be that no one's ever doing that. But certainly with yours, Carol, we would certainly take everything you produce and listen to it.
Look, I'm really inspired with the conversation that we're having now, because I see it as being beneficial in two ways now. One, where we're really being able to make the best use of some really fantastic tutorials, presentations, webinars for people to listen to. But the other might just work as another way to engage people in the network itself, where we could have some links. I did experiment with a couple of things like that, and so I thought I might just pop over to the network and show you what I've done so far. So I'm just going to go and open it up. And
yeah, that would be that's a good way to give somebody
my desktop with you.
Give somebody something to, you know, go to that they would subscribe to, and then if once you subscribe to it, of course, you know, it just gets fed at you.
One of the things that I did in preparation for the first week of our moderating of the network in September, if I can just move this over a little bit, I'll find the scroller. We had the first week focus was Adult Learners Week. So I persuaded a new e-learner and a new e-leader to let me publish their thoughts, which were recorded in voice. So the e-leader and the e-learner in two different parts of Victoria recorded in Audacity, and I put them up into my Podomatic. So I wanted to include those into the network for people to listen to during Adult Learners Week. So I did it this way, and as you can see, it's just coming into view now, and it taught me how to make it work to fit within the network. What I realized was, you're quite right, Vance, I'm going to have to pay for Podomatic if I want to be able to include more into that particular account. But I found it quite useful in that the podcasts could be accessed from here, and they're only a few minutes long. And I think that the time for engaging with someone is probably going to work better for a few minutes rather than for a whole hour. Anyway, I'm keen to explore it a little bit more.
I also find that when I get a podcast and listen to it, then I then know if I want to go back and look at the presentation itself and find the MP4 and that sort of thing. Sometimes you can listen to a podcast and you definitely do need some visuals. But a lot of times they're just people talking, like what we're doing right now. Well, I mean, it's nice to see the websites you're pulling up, but a lot of times we're talking about concepts, and you get quite a lot out of that in just the audio.
Yeah, I also found that it was a very useful little strategy for the two people involved, because it became a learning journey for them. You know, I wanted them to explore how the use of their voice might be something that they want to do more of in the future. So it worked well from two perspectives.
Folks, I'm going to love and leave you at this point. I'm actually leaving the country on Thursday to head to Sweden to visit my son. I'm not coming via the Emirates, unfortunately, Vance. I tried, but it's way too expensive. It will be better next year because Qantas have teamed up with Emirates Air. But I need to go and do stuff. Thanks, Carol and Vance.
Well, my son is down in Melbourne now, so maybe I'll use that as an excuse to get over to Adelaide finally.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Michael. It was delightful. I wish you bon voyage, have a wonderful journey over to Sweden, and having special time with your family is really great. I've taken us back to my opening page of my virtual office because it's soon time for me to pack up and go to bed so that I'm ready for the morning. So thanks, Michael. Look, Claire, I have to admit that this is not really my office. I borrowed this picture. It's close. It looks a little bit like that, but the thing that I've got to change is the view outside the window. That's far too suburban. Mine is very rural. Yep, definitely got the comfy chair and the little screens and all that and the cupboards and that. But yeah, I think I'm dreaming a little bit with that picture.
Well, thank you very much for coming along to chat with us. We've learned a lot from you, and your sites are really amazing. I like especially the eMentors.acfe.vic.edu.au, that wiki space with all the resources. That's pretty, digital literacy library. That's very nice. And this is the 16th of September. Coach Carol is joined us from Hume, Australia, I believe, and this is her her space. So we're going to let her turn the lights out on it. I presume we all have to leave the room in order for you to. Well, the way I usually do it is I just let the conversation flag, then I switch off the recording when people stop talking, and then encourage them to leave the room so I can harvest the recording. And I presume you'll send me a link or something, or tweet it would be just fine. So thanks a lot, everybody, for coming. Claire and David, thank you for your comments. I did read them. Thanks very much, Carol. And we'll catch you later.
Thanks. Thanks awfully, Vance. You are quite right. We stop the recording, and then we exit the room, and that will initiate the link being sent to me by email. But it was kind of enjoyable. This is the first time I've done this, and I like the process. I think I'd like to use it again. So I'll now turn off the recording and say goodnight to you all.